You are listening to The Vitals, a bi-monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. For this episode, we are joined by Loida E. Braithwaite, an oncology nurse practitioner at the University of Wisconsin-Carbone Cancer Center, who discusses treatment approaches in HR-positive breast cancer. She discusses exciting developments and ongoing research in endocrine therapy, prescription and administration consideration for nurses, and how recent approvals might make active treatment more accessible for some populations.
Good morning. Hi, Lindsay.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. I'm good today. Thank you. Sort of start off, SERDs are gaining a lot of interest, but most recently, emicestrant was found not to improve PFS versus endocrine treatment. What are your thoughts here? Could this agent still have a role in this treatment landscape?
Yeah, it was very exciting when we saw early data about emicestrant and how that can impact and how that can be another treatment option for patients, hormone receptor positive for breast cancer. I know the data has not been supported to provide disease-free survival or progression-free survival, but I think still there is a role for this medication, particularly because the AMIRA trial is still going. I mean, I know that the data that we found was for the AMIRA 3 trial, but we have the AMIRA 5 and 6 that are still looking at emicestrant as a way to utilize this medication for patients with hormone receptor positive breast cancer. Particularly, I think the most interesting pieces to me is the AMIRA 5 and AMIRA 6 that are coming up, because you have these patients who, for some reason, are not able to continue with treatment with an aromatase inhibitor, and then we have to change them to a tamoxifen approach. But looking into the emicestrant as an option for those folks who have to stop aromatase inhibitor, I think it's going to open the doors to continue, you know, to have more options versus, okay, you cannot have an aromatase inhibitor. Now the default is tamoxifen, but I think it's promising. It's promising as well as those patients that for some reason we had to end treatment because of toxicity, right? Again, it's opening up the options. Also, it's the AMIRA 5, I believe, is looking into the combination of emicestrant and a CDK4/6 inhibitor like palbociclib. So for the upfront therapy, right? So this is more of like outside the trial. So can we offer patients, again, another option in combination versus your standard of care that we have right now? So I think it is promising, and I think we have a role to look in medications like emicestrant.
It's exciting, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Elacestrant is another intriguing SERD that's sort of gaining attention. Could you highlight its potential with the EMERALD trial and how you see this agent potentially impacting your clinical practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So elacestrant is also a medication that we think it's going to have a potential good impact. I think the biggest piece that I see, you know, with these medications now is that in the past, you had your SERDs, everything had to be intramuscular, right? We know fulvestrant very well. We know initially when SERDs were developed, the bioavailability by mouth, it was one of the biggest limitations that we had. Therefore, we only had fulvestrant as our choice, right, for SERDs. But having, you know, elacestrant now looking in combination with a CDK4/6 inhibitor, the early data is showing that it can be promising for patients as well as another source of treatment. So I think that makes a huge difference, particularly for the population that we serve. We have a patient that, you know, travel longer distances to a cancer center, for example, to receive treatment. So having an oral SERD available for them in the setting of, you know, hormone receptor positive breast cancer, it's going to make a huge difference in terms of accessibility, having that available for patients to take at home versus having to travel XY distance every 4 weeks or so to come and receive treatment to a cancer center. So I think the data from elacestrant is very promising, what we have received, particularly in combination, you know, with a CDK4/6 for patients with advanced breast cancer as well. And, you know, I know there is also trial, the EMERALD is also looking into data for potentially as a treatment option for early breast cancer as well. So just like amsonestrant, there's a lot to come. There is a lot of data to be unfold here, but I think overall it looks promising. And it's good to see that there are options, you know, in an area that we know has been a little stagnant in terms of treatment available for patients with ERPR positive breast cancer.
And switching gears a little bit, talking about SERMs, how do you incorporate this class of agent into your treatment decision-making? And what are some important nursing considerations in regard to some of these agents?
SERMs have been, you know, available for us for several decades now. And one of the pieces that I look into incorporating this treatment option for patients, like what stage are they in terms of not only their breast cancer, but their lives, right? Is this something I look, try to customize and tailor treatment options for patients? And, you know, sometimes we think about, okay, this population, I'm helping and managing cancer treatment for larger population who is premenopausal, the immediate is like a SERM as an option, right? You have your tamoxifen, you have your occasional urelaxifen if they're not able to tolerate. But then we look into this older population as well. You have your postmenopausal with a lot of bone issues and osteoporosis and, you know, very active, no other risk factors in terms of coagulopathy, et cetera. Then I try to tailor. I consider it as SERM as an option for someone who has severe osteoporosis who cannot receive any some additional support for their bone health, etc. So we know the impact that SERM has in terms of bone health, which is usually positive. So I try to incorporate those factors as well into those nursing considerations, right? Not only look at premenopausal versus postmenopausal and make this two big broad categories, but also look at the fine detail with each individual that I care for. So all those decisions come into place when we are looking for treatment that is best suitable for each patient.
What are some of the careful monitoring and toxicity management that comes with administering these to patients?
So careful considerations that we have to look into, what are major risk factors to develop some of those potential side effects? For example, we know that there is an increased risk for development of blood clots in patients who receive SERMs, right? And we know that this can occur at any age, any state, either early stage breast cancer, as well as patients who have advanced disease. With that, we look into other risk factors that can occur as well. And I'm just picking one side effect like DVTs, right, or blood clots. Are the patients experiencing other risk factors like obesity, smoking? There's a personal family history of prior DVTs or prior blood clots. Are they currently on anticoagulation medication, right? So all those risk versus benefits that we have to take into account before making a decision treatment, I think is important. As well as for nurses, the monitoring, right? You are discussing with patients, you're following up, and you're seeing all those risk factors starting to evolve over the years, because we know patients are in endocrine therapy for 5 to 10 years of treatment. So it's something that didn't occur before, didn't exist. This was not there when the treatment was set up, but it's now changing. We as nurses have to be cognizant of all those changes, because life moves and changes. So do our patients. So we have to be very aware of those potential side effects. Other things that we see quite a bit in any patient who is on endocrine therapy with a SERM or with an aromatase inhibitors are sexual issues. And I think it's a topic that we don't often discuss or talk about, but we see quite a bit, a lot of vaginal dryness, a lot of low libido. We see patients experiencing overall fatigue and just not feeling well in terms of their sexual health. We tend to minimize sometimes the impact that management with endocrine therapy can have on patients. So I think it's important for us to keep that in mind, to assess, have these ongoing conversations, as well as like anything, you know, see patients holistically, their overall health, and how every single treatment with endocrine therapy is affecting their quality of life.
I think a really important point you brought up there that often does get overlooked.
Absolutely.
To kind of go back a little bit and talk about aromatase inhibitors, could you speak about their role in the treatment landscape and which patients are most likely to benefit from this type of treatment?
Yeah, absolutely. So historically, aromatase inhibitors have been available mostly for patients who are postmenopausal. And we think about that regardless of age, right? Mostly in their hormonal status because the way how aromatase inhibitors work, right? So, however, over the last at least last 5 to 10 years, we have received data from trials showing that there is a population that may benefit from aromatase inhibitor along with ovarian function suppression, which we have been incorporating a lot more in our standard of care practice for patients with early stage breast cancer that may benefit. And the evidence is very strong about providing good data versus ovarian function suppression with an aromatase inhibitor versus tamoxifen alone for patients diagnosed at early stage with a known nodal disease and typically who have a stage two and up in terms of their breast cancer. It's very important to know the changes because if you have a young patient in their early 20s, 30s who undergoes ovarian function suppression with an aromatase inhibitor, we know that that perhaps is an optimal treatment in terms of risk reduction over the next 10 years. However, the side effects that come undergoing ovarian suppression at such an early age also has some side effects that we have to address. And I think recapping what we mentioned before in terms of sexual health, as well as other physical changes, fatigue, energy, as well as the skin and libido, all those things that change, as well as general, just being in ovarian suppression, fertility is another big issue as well that concerns the younger population. So all those things we have to take into account. You take the physical side effects and add the emotional and psychological distress that occurs because of being on a treatment with endocrine therapy. You have a myriad of side effects that we as nurses have to take into account every time we interact with a patient who is on endocrine therapy, either at the beginning of their treatment or towards the end of their 5, 10 years. I think it's an ongoing process that we have to be aware and we have to be cognizant that it's not a stagnant. Patients change, patients evolve, so do their needs as well.
So, are there any recently approved agents or agents that are currently under development that you feel will really change the patient experience or even the nurse experience from an administration standpoint?
I think, as more SERDs become potentially approved, I think that this is going to change the landscape of endocrine therapy in the management, particularly of patients with advanced breast cancer who are the ones that currently undergo treatment with fulvestrant, which is the SERD that we have available to manage advanced disease. So I think it's going to change the landscape in terms of that accessibility, but as well their needs, right? We have to look in, they're going to be in a continuous management of that medication by themselves at home versus having the reliability of having to come to clinic, make sure the administration. So there comes the other issue of adherence, right? So as nurses, we have to be aware that there may be these gaps. How can we promote and provide good education and assessment, an ongoing assessment? How is your treatment going at home? Is there any issue with adherence? Are you having any questions, any side effects that are preventing you from having those? As well as accessibility. We know that in the United States, coverage for medications varies depending if it's administered at a clinical setting versus if it's something given at home. And that varies from state to state, that varies from insurance to insurance company, et cetera. So I think that's another piece that we have to be very aware of in terms of cost to the patient, coverage, management, accessibility for them to have the medication because may not be the same coverage of prescribing an intramuscular SERD versus having the option of receiving an oral SERD. So I think this medication, as new approvals come, we have to take into account all these other factors that may affect tremendously the decision making into offering such medications because we want the best for patients, but we want to make sure that they also have a reliable source of receiving the medication, but also taking them at home.
Are there any treatments that you feel demand more attention from a toxicity management standpoint, or for which you have any sort of advice for providers who are prescribing these treatments to patients, what to look for and how to mitigate any potential adverse events?
Absolutely. So I think with any endocrine therapy, we have to be aware of, what are the current What is the current history of each individual, and what are the most critical potential side effects to come? Sometimes it's very hard to predict beforehand because we don't have any clear evidence of anything that may exacerbate a given side effect. However, when we start the treatments, we realize that the patient is having a difficult time tolerating a certain category of treatments, for example, aromatase inhibitors. And then it's up to us to make sure that we assess, do a very thorough assessment. It's very easy to overlook certain things in terms of side effects. For example, arthralgia, it's very common with aromatase inhibitors. And sometimes the way how we can educate patients is, you know, don't be afraid or don't be scared to discuss the side effects with us, because sometimes people reserve certain concerns that they have because they are afraid that we may stop treatment altogether and they may not have any support. I think we can definitely provide a lot of teaching, engage with patients and explain that there are typically a multitude of options that we can do and try in the arena of endocrine therapy. I think that provides a lot of comfort for patients, because then it takes away that weight of, oh, if I disclose a side effect, that means that you will try to find something that will be perhaps more available for me and not causing as many side effects as my current treatment, versus you will take this away and I will have nothing to reduce my risk of cancer. So I think engaging in those conversations really helps patients to understand the landscape that we have, all the treatments that we have available. And also, I think have these early conversations of how the environment is changing, how we are learning as we go, how new trials are coming up, and eventually maybe more options available for them as well.
Right. Yeah, wonderful. And that's a really great point about making sure patients understand that that's not a consequence of being honest of what's going on, that there are options available. Is there anything I didn't ask you about today that you feel would be relevant or you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, so I think one piece in terms of the new approvals for options, recently approved, brand new, I guess more than 6 months now, but in October 2021, we received the news of the FDA approval for abemaciclib for early stage breast cancer as an adjuvant treatment. I think that it's definitely changing the landscape. In my experience, I have several patients on this treatment. I think it's the challenges perhaps maybe a little bit different compared to patients with advanced disease who are in a CDK4/6 inhibitor like abemaciclib in combination with endocrine therapy. In my empirical experience is that the mindset perhaps may be a little different. So we have to make sure to provide even a lot more support, not that we have to differentiate who we provide support to or not, but I think the education piece comes on board at a larger demands, because we're doing this treatment. We know it has some potential side effects that can be severe, especially with the GI system and all the patients need a lot of support. Patients in the early stage breast cancer setting do need a lot of support, a lot of education, because sometimes the questions come, do I really need this treatment? Is this really going to help me down the road in terms of risk reduction? And then that's where it comes up to us to share the data, right? Because decision-making, it doesn't happen spontaneously. We are very supported by data, strong scientific research that comes and shows that new therapies are emerging in the adjuvant setting for early stage breast cancer. I think patients with treatment such as abemaciclib and aromatase inhibitor in the metastatic setting is perceived as like, oh, this is a good option for management of my metastatic breast cancer, versus like, do I really have to do this? I think it's up to us as advanced providers, as nurses, to make sure that we provide that education, that support, right? The evidence is out there, and it's, the more we can educate patients about this, I think eventually will become more accessible and more acceptable as another line of therapy in the adjuvant setting.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.